Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Oh my gosh, Kelly, what a week.
Tell me.
Oh, well, on the sad front is that my stepmother, ended up in the ICU the other day. Aww. So hopefully she's being transferred to a regular room today.
Yeah.
So we'll all say a prayer for her.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, she's going to be, I think, 92.
Oh my
gosh. She just every day she has this little shrine to my father and she says she wants to go, but she's obviously has a good will to live because she's pulling through. So
good.
We'll all send a little prayer. So part of me turned into a child this weekend.
Because of this or no?
I don't know. But you know how sometimes things activate like different parts of our personality? So I was like on a mission to just like kind of be a child. So we went and saw Finding Neverland at the Pantages Theater.
Oh, you did?
It was delightful.
Oh, that's so
it's
cool.
It's got one more week there. If you haven't seen it, I think your kids might really
like it.
It's the story of the playwright who created Peter Pan.
Oh.
So it's the inspiration about the four children that he had met at a park and
that's
all the
so
stuff.
Cool.
It was so delightful. It was just, it was so good.
And then you saw Sing, right?
Well, yeah, yesterday was just I was so upset about my stepmom and mm-hmm. I had some cancellations at work and stuff. I'm like, I'm going to go see Sing. So Christopher took off early to be with me and we went to see the movies and we ate way too much popcorn and I was thinking, how do children watch this movie? It was much more for adults than it was for children.
That's why I loved it. It was like my favorite of the movies. First of all, like all the music, I was like so into it because it was like a lot from the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
I think because they knew that parents were going to be there. So I was like jamming out, you know, like it was great.
I love the pig.
Oh my God.
Oh,
so cute.
Okay. Funny stories from you.
Yes. So you know, London. So my youngest is obsessed with eating. I swear to God, the guy like lives for eating. I mean, to the point where I'm a little bit scared. Like there could be some tendencies. But anyway, so my husband was telling me like now he's sort of parroting like what we say to him. So like my husband was saying that he was eating with him the other day and then all of a sudden London kind of like took over his whole meal. Okay. And then so David said, well, can I have some? And he said, you already had enough. And then he says, well, you're going to get a tummy ache or something like that. And he's like, literally. And so now we're just like, I don't know what to do. But he literally stole his whole tray. I mean,
that's so funny.
Isn't that funny? So, yeah, he's going to be I think he'll be a chef. I really do.
No, is he growing fast?
Yeah. I mean, normally,
yeah.
You know,
I mean,
he's not
overweight or anything.
He's not heavy.
He's
and
a little bruiser, though. I mean,
he's tough. He's solid.
Strong. Oh, my gosh.
Right. So so this is really funny. But I think I've told this, too, where like we'll say like I'll say to like, you know, my kids. Like, oh, yeah, I remember we went to the zoo and Remy will say, oh, yeah, I remember the giraffe. And London will say, yeah, I remember I ate popcorn. I had like he'll remember my food. Isn't that amazing?
It's fascinating.
Yeah. And meanwhile, my husband like says to me, I don't understand why people cook when they can put it in the microwave. So like you're dealing with like two opposite ends. And like he thinks it's like a hassle to eat. He's like, why do I have to eat? You know, versus, you know, London, who's obsessed.
Maybe he's compensating for David's lack of interest.
Maybe exactly.
David should
right.
show a little bit more interest and then maybe London, it'll balance
sure.
out.
Yeah. It's crazy. But no, everything else is good. I studied for my exam on Sunday.
How are you
doing?
Well, I had a course.
I'm doing better. I got an 80 on the last
good.
One, so I'm hanging in there. You know?
What's your goal? You're going to try to get to like 85 or 90 to feel confident?
Just to pass. I could care less about the number. Just pass.
But I mean, on the practice test, like what,
I don't have a number.
Just sense of confidence.
I mean, I think I'm in the 80s is fine with me. I'm okay with that.
Perfect.
So we'll see. But
that's good.
Yeah.
That's exciting. When do you think you're actually going to take it?
Oh, God. I hope so. I'm waiting for the approval. As soon as I get that, I feel like waiting in the hallway is so hard when you're like no action to take but wait.
Oh,
right?
It's
like
it's the worst.
It really is. It's like I'm an action seeker. Like I can't just I feel like I'm on like a treadmill. Like I just want to go. So anyway.
So sadly, we just discovered that we both failed on our promise to each other for this week. We
yes.
were going to have one of the recipes from Acharya Shunya was our guest last week who wrote the Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, a complete prescription to optimize your health, prevent disease, and live with vitality and joy. And we were going to do one of her recipes from her book. But I have carried the book around with me, and I did go out and buy a big thing of turmeric.
Oh, yes. So did I. I bought turmeric and ginger. So I'm going to give us a half a point each.
Okay.
Okay. Right. And that makes a point. That makes a whole. So I think we passed.
Ginger. That's funny. I bought ginger too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I bought the ginger from Sprouts. That was kind of, it's kind of sweet. It has sugar coated. And they're, yeah. It's kind of like good. A date.
Oh,
but
my
ginger.
God. And you know I love dates. I know. And figs.
Yes.
Delicious. Anyway.
All right.
I'm like London. I'm into the food.
Without further ado, why don't you do the
oh, my God. I am.
We're so excited.
Seriously,
for today's guest.
I like. And I mean this sincerely. This is one of my all-time favorite guests. This is going to go down in history. I'm going to give you a little background. I saw this woman a few years back on Dr. Oz, and I was mesmerized. It was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I loved her whole persona. And I said to my husband, like, I want to meet her. And I just think she's absolutely fantastic. And she is. Her name is Lillian Pearl Bridges, and she's the world's leading authority on face reading and facial diagnosis. She's credited for bringing the body of ancient knowledge back to the field of Chinese medicine and introducing it to Western medicine and business. She has over 25 years of experience in speaking and teaching to complementary and allopathic doctors, acupuncturists, and other natural health practitioners, CEOs, and executive management teams. She has developed a Golden Path program to help her individual clients find and pursue their life's purpose. Lillian is the founder of the Lotus Institute and the Lotus Institute Press based in Seattle. She's learned her skills from a long line of master Chinese practitioners in her Chen family lineage and received her degree in psychology from UCLA. She's the author of Face Reading and Chinese Medicine, second edition, a bestseller in the genre, and has been a guest on numerous TV and radio shows. Welcome, Lillian.
Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Oh, that's so exciting. How so in cool. the world did you get into the field of face reading?
Well, you know, this wasn't actually planned. I think it was really karmic. My grandmother was a master face reader. She learned from her father, who taught her even though she was a girl, because she was his favorite child. And I fell in love with my grandmother. I moved from Japan when I was a child, and I think I was 5 years old, and I sat by her side basically my whole life, my whole young life, and I watched her read faces. She read everybody, and she taught me. And so I've been doing it since I was very little.
Oh, my God. And, okay, yeah. And I would say, like, what percent do you feel like you're pretty much right on? Like, I mean, is it like...
Oh.
Yeah.
It's very accurate, but I have to say it's very, very accurate. I mean, it's subject to some interpretation, obviously, but the traits are obvious to see, so it's a really high percentage of accuracy.
That's so cool. Well, we'll share. Lillian did a reading for us, about half hour ago, right on the money. Like, amazing. Oh, my God. And it was so cool. And, I mean, I was like, oh, my God. And I said to Deborah, I'm so glad she told you those things because you're not listening to me when I tell you. So it was perfect. We both needed to hear them.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're both psychologists. And I think psychologists are very good face readers. I think you watch people's expressions all the time. So it's a pretty natural thing. This is just an ancient art that's made more of it, as the details are important.
Wow.
Well, it was very cool for me to hear how sweet I am, because I think
you are very
sweet.
It's true. Very sweet smile.
And then the other thing I really liked hearing was that I'm getting luckier with age. I mean,
that is
the best gift.
Yeah, such a beautiful jaw.
It is so cool. Right. When I loved it, she said about me, I love this. I can't wait to tell my difficult kids that I have eyebrows to handle difficult people. That's just so cool. That's really interesting.
You
but you know what?
Cortisone's eyebrows are fabulous.
So cool. What are they called again? How do you say it?
Cortisone's eyebrows. They were women that the emperor liked the best because they were so pleasant to be around. They're just always, you know, in a good mood, and they were always just lovely people to be around. So, yeah, you have cortisone eyebrows. Those are very lucky.
That's so cool.
And she's funny. But we know that.
Oh, she's so funny.
I love that. Oh, yeah. And where was the funny line? How do you tell
you
that?
You had a humor line in your lower lip, which is one thing. But you also had a really good way with words, just the corner of your eyes. And so the two things together show that you have a very intelligent sense of humor.
So cool. Oh,
you
my
said
gosh.
Something
but
so...
not slapstick. Witty. You know, very witty.
Very witty. She says some things sometimes on air that just crack me up. I can't let
yeah,
them go. Something
totally.
Like, I'd rather be in like a Mexican prison.
Oh,
what was that one
that
you
God.
Said?
Oh, my God. Which one? Like, I usually use that expression, like if I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, changing another. Well, first of all, my both my kids like potty trained late till they were like four, and I felt like I was changing a man. So we talked about that. Like literally, I mean, it's like when they're like four, they're like little men, you know. But I usually, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to remember what I said, but I'm sure I'd say it again.
Suffer in a hole in a Mexican prison than something or other. It was just so funny.
Funny, yeah. So okay, so I have a lot of questions here. So yeah. Sure. Okay, so can facial features change?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
What's really interesting is, and this is validated by the field of epigenetics, we actually carry more traits than we use, and we present. I mean, I've come to the conclusion at this point in my life that the face is actually holographic. So we are showing on the face what's going on inside, and people don't really change. They grow, or they find new aspects of themselves they bring out, and that will change their features. And I've seen features change on a lot of people.
Wow. Tell us about the role then of trauma and healing trauma and how that is presented in the face.
Well, trauma shows primarily as markings on the facial map of life experiences, and it's pretty easy to see how old someone was when trauma occurs. You can't actually tell what happened. You can just tell how old someone was, and you can also kind of see what kind of thing it might have been based on the severity of the marking. So, for example, I have clients who have on their ears cartilage that kind of looks like it's cut away, mm-hmm. and that actually means something was taken away. I mean, literally, something was taken away. Could have been, they moved and lost their friends, or someone died, or whatever. And you can see that. And people mark whatever is most important to them. So it's kind of interesting, you know, being a mom, I wanted to make sure my kids didn't suffer, you know, as much trauma as I could protect them from, but you can't protect kids from trauma. And it's really interesting. People see situations so differently, and what you think is trauma, someone else won't.
Yeah.
So it really is very personal what you think is important, and you mark what's important, good or bad, that's stressful or traumatic.
And it can be anywhere on the face.
Yeah, the thing about the face is the older the marking, the more important it is, because it sets up, you know, a framework for your belief system. But you can mark tomorrow if something traumatic happens to you. And it's really cool to see that when you do therapy mm-hmm. And you work with trauma, the markings lessen in severity. So you actually can see that people are processing, which is wonderful.
So amazing. So, and I love this in your book, and I'm going to share this also. Like, I loved, because I remember reading this, and you said that it's not great to do Botox because you need to sort of you need to process these emotions and you're almost like freezing your face and you're not able to kind of go there.
Right.
So I love that.
I personally think wrinkles aren't permanent. I mean, if you want to have them, that's perfectly fine, but they're caused by stuck emotions. And, you know, if you unstick them, you're going to lose those wrinkles. And I've had lots and lots of clients, as well as myself, have the ability to lose wrinkles, so I know it's possible. And the problem with Botox, and this is the real problem, is that it freezes the liver. The area that they inject it into, which is between the eyebrows, is a minor liver area.
Uh-huh.
And when you inject Botox, it starts looking what the Chinese call mutton fat jade. It causes what's called a frozen liver.
Oh,
and what they've discovered is, in Western medical science research, is that it makes you unable to feel or express anger or sadness.
Mm.
So it's actually harming your ability to handle two really important emotions. And those are obviously things that we have repressed if we have trauma. So you're not going to access what's underneath
mm-hmm.
When you use Botox. So I'm not a big fan. I mean, people can do it if they want to. I believe in free choice, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
Isn't that so interesting?
Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah.
Wow, that's
so
really
cool.
So now what about you can read people's faces whether they're wearing makeup or not, right? I mean, the
role it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, obviously makeup can contour the face and all of that, but it doesn't really matter because the size of the features, you know, are still very apparent to me, and wrinkles mm-hmm. are too. You can't really hide wrinkles that well. So, you know, I can read a lot there. The only thing it can do, which can cause problems, is diagnostically, it can change the coloration a bit. So I can't sometimes see the colors that tell me about certain, disease states. But other than that, I don't care about makeup at all. Yeah, it's no problem.
So cool. So, okay, so for the lay listener, can you kind of give us maybe a couple, maybe things that stand out kind of immediately when you see people and what that means?
Well, I mean, the very first thing I always see, it's just my way, is as I look at people's eyes to see if they're present or not. I mean, the Chinese believe that in something called Shen, which is the spirit. So I'm always looking to see if someone's fully present, and most people aren't, by the way. I don't know where they live in their head or, you know, wherever, but I do look for that, and I do try to elicit people to be more spirited, you know, in a session. So I always look at eyes first. That's the very first thing I look at, but then I'll look to see if any features pop out at me, and every feature corresponds to a certain organ, and those organs correspond to certain emotions and certain traits, and so I will definitely look at someone and kind of go, wow, look at that amazing whatever it is, you know, cheekbones or nose or whatever, chin, you know. I love to see features that pop out at me that give me a message.
That's so cool. What a good way to start, too, the session, you know? It's like...
Yeah. Well, I believe that people don't love their features enough. I think you should love your face. Everything you have is for a reason. It's a very interesting combination that only you have, and it's valuable stuff. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh. If anybody would like to give a call and ask Lillian or us a question, please do so at 323-203-0815. We're talking with Lillian Bridges, the author of Face Reading in Chinese Medicine, and this is so much fun.
I know. Oh my God.
So give us a little bit more. Now, Kelly, you called them the lay listener, but we might have seated listeners also.
Yes.
So, could you tell us, like, what organs correspond to which areas of the face?
Well, it's actually really simple, and even Western medicine is in line with this one. I mean, for example, the liver corresponds to the white of the eyes and also to the eyebrows. And I'll just give you an example. My mother is not young anymore. Anyway, she's on multiple medications, and one of the signs that I knew she was over-medicated was that her eyebrows started to fall out. Mm-hmm. And that was a really clear sign that her liver was having trouble handling all the medication. And because she's Chinese, too, she has a lower tolerance. So I did work with her doctors to lower the dosages because it was too strong for her, you know. So that's just something to see. And you'll know that people who have jaundice will get, you know, yellow in the whites of their eyes. So it's a very clear connection. Mm-hmm. From the liver to the eye whites and also to the eyebrows.
I'm curious about that. So if a child has jaundice, what does that typically mean? Because I know they put them under the lights, so that means their liver's not functioning properly?
Yeah, they're having problems actually digesting the blood that they have to process when they're born. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that they have a weak liver. It just means that they're overburdened, and so they're exhausted trying to handle, you know, the birth experience. So tend not to be the most... active kids, actually. Believe it or not, those are the ones who are slightly more passive. They had to work too hard to get born, basically, and to come into the world. So they'll be fine.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Wow. Very, very interesting. Yeah, because I remember a little infant that I was friends with. He had really yellow eyes, and he had, like, a liver issue. I mean, it was, like, bright yellow. I've never seen anything like it.
They're having trouble processing the blood. It's just one of the things that happens. But, yeah, that's not too scary. I mean, when I see jaundice later in life, I'm much more concerned than babies. So, I think the liver loves to regenerate. So it's not a terribly dangerous thing to have happen. But when people are older and they have, like, yellow in their eyes and also over their skin, it's pretty serious.
Oh, yeah.
So when you were reading Kelly and me before the show, which was so delightful, you were so kind. I mean, you said such amazing, nice things.
So
now,
sweet.
If you were to see something that was less than kind in someone, like, have you ever just, like, sat in front of someone and said, this is a mean bitch, you know, this person just...
No, actually, no, because it's not the way I view the world, but let me explain to you why. I actually don't see things as negative. I just see things. And I tend to have a positive bent on things because I like strength and features. And so I'm not trying to be Pollyanna or something and say, oh, everything's wonderful. There are some traits that are obviously not easy to say. We all have them, you know. But they're often very useful, and there's a reason why you have them. So I tend to see things in a vaguely positive light because I think it's my own upbringing as well. Chinese culture tends to be somewhat critical. And so I like to just see things without judgment and kind of go, oh, you have this. And so I think it helps people just accept what they have, and then they can choose to use it in whatever way they like. And, I mean, some traits are very useful, but they can also be problematic depending on how you use them. So I try to remove the judgment, basically.
Sure.
Well, I really like that, actually. That's how I work with my clients, too, is because people say, they'll come in and they'll say, somebody just called me manipulative. And I'll say, well, probably you are manipulative sometimes. We all need to be manipulative at times.
Yeah.
Every quality has a positive side to it.
Sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So I do focus on that, and it's also to help people with their self-esteem. Most people are very self-critical, or they've been criticized, and I think that's harmful for your immune system. So I do try to help people feel better about themselves.
Oh, and you did such a great job.
We're
on a face high. We're both on a face high. I'm serious. Oh, my gosh. Okay,
that's
so... I would love for you to tell a little bit about kind of how you diagnose health problems, like if you know maybe some of the telltale signs that you see on that front.
Well, I actually teach this. I don't use it in my practice so much. If someone comes to me with a health problem, I'll help them see it on their face and show them what kinds of things might help that. But I do teach doctors and acupuncturists and other health practitioners how to diagnose. And primarily, because every organ shows on the face, you can actually see how that organ is functioning in real time. So you can actually see how the pancreas is doing. If there's blood sugar problems, you can see how, you know, the lungs are doing. You can see so much, especially with the coloration, that it's just learning how to read the signs. And diseases have certain markers as well. And I am able to teach that to people who can use it to diagnose. And it's really useful as another diagnostic tool to be able to see, you know, not just from a test or just from other diagnostic methods, you know, what's going on.
And
it's very accurate.
So when you were talking about me and saying I was blood deficient, did that have to do with the coloring or was that...
Yeah, the tip of your nose, which is the heart, your nose tip was pale. Actually, your whole face was a bit pale. Mm-hmm. And so you just look like you need to build blood. And it's not a very dangerous thing. It's quite common. And so however you want to do that, there's many, many ways. But building blood's important for you, yeah.
That makes complete sense. It was so funny because before I was on with you, I was like, I look so pale. I should put on a little blush so when I see Lillian. And then I said, no, I don't want to put on blush because I don't want to, you know, I want her to get the accurate. You know, whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Now, what's something?
Well, you
like,
wouldn't have blessed the tip of your nose. I don't think. I still would have seen it, but
would something like taking iron supplements help, Kelly? Would that be?
Oh,
possibly. It didn't look like it was strictly an iron issue, though. I have to say, it's probably just a dietary issue. So I would amp foods that, you know, build blood, and that can be anything from red meat to dark green vegetables to goji berries to molasses to beets. So, you know, it's a number of things that work really well for blood building.
That's good. I like goji.
I like working with food. I'm like your son, actually.
You two would get along great. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So, yeah, and that's another good segue question. How much do you think foods play a part in our health and helping us?
Well, you know, according to the Chinese, food was the first medicine. So I have this wealth cycle that I wrote about in my book, and the Chinese believe in this particular cycle, and they say if you're healthy, then you can work hard. If you can work hard, then you can grow good food to eat, or you can eat good food. And if you eat good food, then you're healthy. So to them, food was really, really critical. And so I often will use food as a way that I will help people, you know, achieve better health, because I can see that so easily on their face that they need certain things.
Yeah. That makes complete sense.
You know, it's one of the ways that I do work with people. So, yeah.
So cool.
If you were to name maybe three foods that would be like ideal for everybody to eat on a regular basis. I know that's kind of a weird question, but.
I'd say lots of green vegetables.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I also believe in soup, you know, bone broth if you're, you know, not if you're a carnivore, and also vegetable soups if you're vegetarian. I believe in soup and broth. I think that's just like really, really critical.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the third one would be. Probably fat. I actually am a big believer in healthy fat.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there's signs in the face, for example, there's pain lines that they're kind of diagonal lines on the outside corners of your eyes.
Okay.
And they come from like the temple area towards the nose. And that's actually a sign not only that you have chronic pain, but that you have a depletion of essential fatty acids, which the myelin sheath needs in order to buffer pain. And so it's a sign that you need to eat a lot more saturated fat, actually. So I'm a big proponent on fat for most people. good fats, so you know.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, especially because I feel like the 90s, the whole fat-free and the whole... And
yeah, well, no, I never believed in that one. That's actually pain-inducing.
That made people fat.
Your brain needs cholesterol.
My God. Well, I remember...
And it made people fat, right?
I literally remember in high school, because of course, as a teen, you believe all of this. So I remember literally getting a fat-free Entenmann's cake with my friends and splitting it and thinking it's like no calories. And it was like, literally, we split in fours.
I'm a big believer in grass-fed butter. So I think that's butter's brilliant. Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh. My personal favorite.
Right. So cool. Wow.
Is there any relation? Do you have any background in Qigong and or acupuncture? Are those related to any of the things?
I actually teach people in acupuncture. I don't do acupuncture. I'm not an acupuncturist. I'm actually an expert on facial diagnosis and face reading. So I didn't study acupuncture at acupuncture school. I did learn Chinese medicine in a more apprenticeship method from my grandmother, from what she knew about it. But I actually don't practice that. And Qigong, I'd love to say that I do it, but I don't. So I prefer dancing. I have a Bollywood dance video.
Oh, that's so cool.
I like to dance.
Nice.
I used to do Jane Fonda's workout.
I love it. That's so cool.
I'm into dancing.
And then I love that you try to help people find their life's purpose. And is that through the face also, or just talking with them, or how do you do that?
Well, that's actually an aspect of the face that shows potential. And it isn't really fortune-telling, although it can certainly be used that way. And in China, they did use it that way. And in fact, face reading was used for matchmaking. It was used for business. It was used for health. It was used for a number of things. And one of the things that people tried to do is help you figure out like what you're supposed to do with your life here, because you have something called Ming, which is a mandate from heaven. And so the face kind of shows a lot of traits that kind of give you clues about what you're supposed to be doing while you're here, you know. And it's people know. They actually know, even if they don't think they know, just by talking with them about who they are and what they're capable of doing, they almost always bring it out themselves, and then I encourage them. So it's a really wonderful way of helping people recognize that they have gifts that they're meant to use while they're on this planet.
That is so cool.
Awesome.
And they're all there, yeah.
So one of the things that attracts people to one another is the lips, right? Like
the
shape of the lips and all of that.
That's interesting.
Lips.
Can you speak to that a bit?
I'm sorry, what?
Can you speak to that a bit? What? Tell us more about the lips.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have a kind of a funny comment. Often people ask me how they can get bigger lips. And my standard answer is you should kiss more.
Oh, that is so cute. Yes.
That's what they call it, sucking
kissing
face, right?
Kissing makes the lips grow. So I believe in kissing as the best technique for growing lips. Lips actually show so many things. I mean, it can show diagnostic things in terms of the stomach, and it can also show sensuality versus sexuality. Neither one is better than the other. It's just that, you know, fuller lips love sensuality more than thinner lips who love sexuality more. So there's some great traits there, but also, you can see things like how wide the mouth is. Generosity is seen in how wide the mouth is compared to the nose. And it doesn't mean that people with smaller mouths aren't generous. They're just more careful about what they're generous with or who they're generous to. So it's just so many traits there. Humor is on your lower lip, you know, and...
I remember
great stuff there.
It's so interesting. I don't know why like certain things from your book stand out to me. And one of them, which I always remember is, I don't know if it's on the chin, but the little lines underneath meaning or around the lips, meaning that you've always taken care of people and been.
When you over nurture other people, you get those lines on your upper lip. And
so
those lines just say that you're not thinking of yourself. And what's really cool is those lines are pretty easy to get rid of as long as you pamper yourself and nurture yourself pretty intensely. And my joke is that the guiltier you feel, the faster the lines go away.
So that's great.
You need to feel really guilty about taking care of yourself, and then the lines just go away. You know, and I watch these on myself all the time because I really like lipstick, and I see those little smudges happen when I get little lines there when I overdo for others. And I go, okay, what can I do for myself? And usually it involves buying shoes.
So cool.
I buy an expensive pair of shoes, and funny thing, those lines go away.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Absolutely. Well, I think what's so cool is that
it's funny.
I feel like
it's true,
most people don't know this. They don't. They would never put this connection about wrinkles being traumas.
It's the weirdest thing. Yeah. It's just doing for others too much and not pampering yourself. And it's whatever makes you really happy makes those lines go away. I mean, I have estheticians who go, oh, I can get rid of those lines, and it's just because the person's having this wonderful facial, and those lines will go away if you treat yourself well.
Oh, so true. So
yeah, I'm a big believer in taking care of yourself, yeah.
So curiously then, what's the role of like facial creams and things like that in terms of, you know, they're always selling us all of that stuff.
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I mean, dehydration needs to be worked on from the inside out more than the outside in. Now, the outside in helps, but really if you're dehydrated, your skin is really dry, you've got to work on the inside. You've got to hydrate your skin. But I do believe creams are helpful. I mean, obviously, they're very helpful. And so I do think that that's something that people should invest in, you know, things that are really good for them. And I personally prefer natural, but, you know, I do think there's some great creams out there.
Yeah. I remember, like, right after I read your book, I bought some of the skincare that you recommended. It's so funny.
Well, do tell.
I'm like a Lynn Bridges groupie. Like, I'm just going to say it out there. I am.
Thank you. So I appreciate it.
Well, what do you suggest as some of the natural...
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Do you suggest for some of the natural versions of facial health in terms of, you know, our skin and such?
Well, it's really interesting. I think that we often don't understand how the facial muscles work and things. And so I think facial massage is a really lovely thing, and that's what you should be doing with yourself with those natural creams. And so it's one of the few areas of the body where the muscles are not attached to the bone in the same way, so you don't want to overuse them. And that's why I don't really believe in facial exercise, but I do believe in facial massage. So I think it's really wonderful to use great creams and really rub it very lovingly into your skin, and I think it brings more blood to the surface and all that. So I do recommend being gentle with your skin, though. I'm kind of not I'm not for really strong things that people do with the skin, you know, yeah. Peels and things. They're hard on your skin.
Sure. No, that makes complete
Kelly
sense.
Kelly and I were both rubbing our
faces. We were both doing the massage. I was like, God, that feels good.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, it really helps a lot.
Drinking water and rubbing our faces. That's what we do in studio.
Actually, soup is even better than water. Soup is really hydrating. It's very, very hydrating, so I recommend it highly.
But is that because of the sodium in it that it makes you
retain? Yeah, the minerals that help the water stay in your body, so it's really helpful.
Well, it's so funny because I just got an Instapot, and I've been making all these soups, and I love it.
Oh,
it's
I thought
so
it was some
good.
Sort of new toilet, an Instapot.
No, not a toilet. Although my creation might taste like that, but no, it's like soups and things like that.
It's great stuff.
That's cool.
So I'm curious, back to this life purpose for a second. Did you see anything for me life purpose-wise? I'm always curious about this.
Well, you're on track. I mean, you do have purpose lines, and those are the lines that people don't like. They're the ones that come from the alley of your nose down towards the mouth, you know, going towards the chin.
Yes.
And I really love these lines because they actually show that you know who you are and you know at least part of what you're supposed to be doing with your life. So I love those lines, and you both have them. So I was very pleased to see that, by the way. I didn't mention it, but I was pleased.
What a beautiful gift. No, seriously, because I feel like I will now look at, like, lines so differently, you know?
Yeah.
God,
there's some great ones, like joy lines, you know, the lines that are, we often call them crow's feet. I don't know why, but I love those lines because they're actually a sign that you laugh and smile a lot.
Yes.
And whenever you laugh and smile a lot, you release endorphins, and that's your body's natural painkillers. And I think we should be laughing and smiling a lot more. So when I see joy lines, I'm happy
so
to
nice.
See them. I don't think they're a sign of age. I think they're a sign of, like, a wonderful personality.
Right. Yeah.
I don't trust people who don't have any lines.
Oh, my God.
It's like, who are you?
Yeah.
Or they've done a lot of Botox. Yeah.
You can lose lines, but some you've earned, you know, so the badges.
Now, this makes me really curious, and I don't know that you would be able to answer this, but then do sociopaths have fewer lines than heartwarming people?
Yeah, probably, because when you don't have a conscience, you know, you don't, you're not going to suffer. So yeah, there'll be less lines.
Interesting.
And really, sociopathology is somewhat easy to see in the eyes if you study them.
Yes.
But they do, in general, have less lines, but so do people who are in their heads a lot. So if you're really a thinker versus a feeler, you'll have less lines as well.
Oh, interesting.
Tell me more about what you see in the eyes of a sociopath, because I learned one for a few years.
Well, there's something called a false Shannon that occurs, which is a false light. And so they're very, very bright eyes. They're very intelligent, but it's not a warm light. It's a cold light because it's from the brain, not from the heart. Because the fire element, which carries the Shen, is either in the heart or in the brain or both. And people who are sociopathic tend to be mostly in their heads, and their, you know, their minds are very manipulative. And so there is this very bright Shen, which can appear very charming, but usually the mouth and the eyes don't match very well in terms of, like, smile. And you also see that there is a kind of a coldness that's behind the eyes, and it's often not seen because people are dazzled by the charm, you know. So there is definitely a particular look that you can see with sociopathology.
I remember there was a picture.
Or
yeah, I remember there was a picture in your book of that, and I can't remember who it was, but I was, like, so taken by it because it was so interesting.
Yeah. Well, and the difference is when someone's a psychopath, the eyes are... They're very dark. They're very, very dark. They're kind of mesmerizing in a way, but they're very dark. Oh. I don't mean dark color. I mean dark energetically.
So interesting. Wow. By the way, this is a beautiful book, and I'm not just saying this. It's absolutely gorgeous with all these
photos.
Photos, and oh my gosh, this is so interesting. So now, so you're currently teaching, and so anybody can kind of attend your courses and things?
Yeah, I teach all over the world, actually, but I do have my own school, and I teach people how to become face readers, and it's a pretty intense program, and I will say the one thing about it is that people really find out all about themselves, and the other side effect is that people lose wrinkles.
Sign me up. I'm there.
Yeah, they process so much stuff. So I'm a big believer in psychology, by the way, in case you didn't know. I just think that processing old trauma is really, really valuable, and you know, when you can reverse trauma and make it something wonderful, wrinkles go away. Wow. It's just fabulous.
And how long's the program?
It's three different modules, and you can take it, you know, 1 a year, 2 a year, or 3 a year. I offer 3 a year in Seattle, and also in it will be in England. Currently it's in Hamburg. So yeah, I offer it in two different places in the world, and people are welcome to join.
Oh my gosh, I'm so signing up, and I'm not kidding. After I take my exam.
It'd be great to have you.
Yes,
I love having psychologists come, by the way.
It's just so fascinating to me. I mean, I'm sure everybody who joins is like the same way as me. It's just so cool. I think it's one of the neatest things.
How
ever.
Long is a module? How long is a module?
It's 5 days.
Oh, 5 days, yeah.
That's
yeah.
doable.
Yes,
five days
sure.
at a time. It's very intense. And there is a fourth module, the Ming module, that people can do if they want to learn how to do the predictive aspect of face reading, which is a whole different thing. But yeah, I don't do a lot of matchmaking, just so you know. That's what I do use this for business, but matchmaking is one that I've stayed a bit away from.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, because certain features could go with certain features on somebody else?
Yeah, but I think there's no accounting for chemistry, you know, and that's something I'm not going to be able to read.
Sure. Oh my God, that's so cool. Wow.
Yeah, if you're matching families and matching, you know, all kinds of other things, it's so easy to do. But chemistry is a whole different ballgame.
Right. Oh, of course. Do you have a funny story for us? Like somebody maybe you sat in front of and you were just like, you saw so many things about them that they were like clueless. Like they're like, what? What? What are you talking about?
That happens. People get very surprised. I often say to myself, though, you know, people should know what I'm telling them because it's them, you know.
Yeah.
And yet some people are just so surprised because they have, you know, a view of themselves that's so different than what I see, you know. And often we carry things from our childhood where we were labeled something, you know.
Oh, yes.
I mean, honestly, I have told people who were so shocked when I tell them they're beautiful. Honestly, I think they're beautiful. Their features are just stunning, and their Shen, their spirit's just, it's amazing. And they'll go, oh, no, I was a smart one. And they'll just go, they just totally deny it because they have in their mind, oh, no, they can't possibly be attractive because they were the smart one.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens quite often. And I almost always laugh and go, oh, no.
Right.
You're undervaluing yourself a great deal because there's great beauty there.
Oh, my God. That is so... It's sad.
And I actually told someone who was quite famous that one time, and she said, I'm known for my athletic ability, not for my beauty. But she was beautiful. So.
Right. But you're so right. They get kind of caught in this label.
Yeah. Well, she was actually glowing because she was doing exactly what she was meant to do, you know. So that was very cool.
I'll never forget when my mother called me lazy. I don't know anybody who's less lazy than I am,
for sure.
Oh, but
it was
yeah, and
so
that label
profound.
Label hurts.
Oh
yes.
My gosh! I was taking 21 units in a semester in college.
Uh-huh. I did that once too. Yeah, ouch.
Yeah, I was getting my. I got my bachelor's degree in 3 years instead of four.
Oh my God!
And she had the nerve to call me lazy.
Mm.
It was just like a projection.
And
really. It
sticks, you know. That's where that saying "sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me" is wrong. We need a new phrase. I'm gonna list you guys to help me come. come up with a new phrase, because sometimes those words are so painful.
For
they
sure.
Are. They do distort your entire self-perception.
They do. And so I'm often working with people's view of themselves that's distorted based on those childhood traumas, and they go, oh, no. And I remember telling this one girl, she was so intelligent. I mean, she was so bright. And we were talking about her interests, and her interest was in holistic medicine, and she'd read everything. And she goes, I said to her, why don't you go into it? She goes, oh, no, I'm not smart enough. And I said, I just had a really intelligent conversation with you for half an hour about holistic health. And I said, I think you're way smart enough. And it gave her the courage to go apply to become a naturopath, and she is one now. And
she
always says to me, she was really the first person that thought that I was smart. And it's like, how could people not think she was smart? She was just so bright.
Uh-huh. Because I guess people like to put other people down in the areas that they're threatened, right? I think for my mother, she was so threatened that she wasn't doing something 24 hours a day, that she was not worth anything. So she was sort of probably thought she was helping motivate me so that I wouldn't be, the slug on the couch. But
now
it took years for me to
You're probably exhausted with 21 units, you know. But, but the thing is with this girl, what was interesting to me is that she was given the label somewhat at school. It turns out she was mildly dyslexic. That was part of it. But the other part of it was she was really, really bored. And the label was given to her because she was bored at school, not because she wasn't intelligent.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's insane.
So upsetting.
You know. But you know what the beautiful thing is? But the beautiful thing is I think we have more awareness around it now with the kids in our generation than I think, with yours. Like I see parents now and they're much more, I mean, maybe to the other side where we're kind of like, giving them more entitlement, but I don't hear about it as much,
Well, there's always something every generation, right?
Exactly. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to encourage people not to express quite as many emotions in this generation. I think my father's was way too repressed. I think, as every generation has come since then, we've become more and more expressive. Now I think maybe we're expressing a bit more than we need to.
Although, I don't know, but with the texting and the whole, I feel I don't know, I'd rather people be more expressive because they're not really expressing themselves via text because you're kind of having that shield.
Right, Well, I was commenting more on the things that were exaggerating their feelings, like everything's so terrible. Dramatic stuff.
Uh-huh. Actually, the best way...
I just call it emotional management. It's like, it's okay to react to anything, just manage it.
I was going to say, my very favorite way of expressing my emotions now is through Bitmojis.
Oh.
I love them. Oh my gosh. Sometimes.
Have you seen those, Lillian? That look like you?
No.
And
I have not seen them. It would scare me. It would really scare me.
No. That's so much fun. I mean, I could be having the worst day of my life and I go onto the Bitmoji app and I just crack up. They're so hysterical. You just download the Bitmoji app and you create your own likeness, and it's a startling. Now, you're not going to like this because you're a face person and everything's not going to be completely.
Oh, that's right. She's too biased.
It's like a little caricature, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have another question for you is that do you look at people down the street and think, oh, look at her, there's heart issues? Or, is it hard to turn it off?
It's an occupational hazard. I warn all of my students, as soon as you start learning face ring, you start watching Easy News and going, oh, look at that. He's showing his bottom teeth, And I do warn people. It's a bit of a problem. I tend to get onto airplanes and just read books because I don't want to, be reading everybody because I can't help myself. It's not something I can turn off. And so I go to parties and people are actually scared of me. I go, no, I'm off duty. Even though I see what I see, I just kind of go, don't pay attention.
Yeah.
I just don't process it because I don't want to be on,
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
But I scare people.
Wow.
I think people walk away from me with their hands over their face going, oh my God, you're a face reader. It's like, oh dear.
This is so funny because Deborah and I are like, come on, invite us in. Like,
I know.
We're like getting you in our pores.
And that's cool. People are afraid. They're afraid of what I see,
Uh-huh.
But that is also an occupational hazard of being a psychologist, right? You're at a party and somebody says, you're a psychologist. Can you read my mind? No, I can't read your mind.
Do they actually say that?
Yes. Yes. I'm like, no, that's not what I do.
Oh, my God, that's really
So what are you thinking about me right now? Well, I really wasn't trying to think about you right now.
But now I
Except
am.
That you're boring.
Yeah,
or no,
exactly.
I'm kidding.
So interesting.
That's great, yeah. So I do try to avoid staring at strangers and looking at their face going, oh, my gosh, you're really sick. Because I also can't tell them. So it's like,
Yeah, exactly.
Hard.
Sure.
You can't tell uninvited. Is that kind of the rule of thumb?
No, but I also don't diagnose technically because I'm not... a doctor, I'm not an acupuncturist, so I don't diagnose people. I see it, but I usually ask them, they have any health concerns, and then I'll talk to them about it. I'll talk about what I see that validates what they've been diagnosed with, or, you know, what they can do about it that I know about.
And you know what I do too? You're going to laugh so hard, Lillian. When my friends are like early stages of pregnancy, I can always tell because of that. I forget the name of it, but the upper lip, the
The philtrum. The philtrum. It's like really puffy and really pink. It's really easy to see.
Isn't that interesting?
Also, too, about the third trimester. At the end of the first trimester. You often see double Shen. Their eyes get women's eyes get really, really bright because they have their Shen and the baby Shen, and it's beautiful.
That's so neat. Oh, that is
so
cool.
Really. That's why it's so beautiful to be pregnant. It's beautiful.
Well, and also, I remember you talking about the hairline. Like, if you have the widow's peak, doesn't it mean you're more
fertile? You have one. You have one.
Oh, that's so... I thought I did. It's so funny. But that
I know
usually,
I thought.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because I remember, like, I was watching the Kardashians. I'm sorry. I will totally admit it. And the one of them on there, Courtney, you know, had a widow's peak. And she's, you know, she's got three kids. And she loves kids. And, like, very fertile. And I feel like, yeah.
Yes.
It's just sort of interesting to see
that. It's extra yin. It also attracts the opposite sex. Actually, it just attracts people. It's this extra yin, so a lot of creativity and a lot of fertility. And if men have it, it's called the M-shaped hairline, and it makes them, you know, a little more sensitive, but definitely creative. It's considered a very attractive trait.
So interesting. Wow.
And you have one, just
so
you know.
Cool. That's so funny. Wow.
I did see it.
Oh, that's so cool.
So exciting. So tell us, you've got one more story for us? We just have a few minutes left.
Well, I have to say that my favorite story is actually one about myself, of course. No, it's about losing wrinkles. I told Kelly this before the program started. I have taken pictures of myself over the years, you know, and I have lots of them, of course, because I used to model and things. And I have to say, I have been watching myself in terms of how I've changed. And I went to a high school reunion, and someone came up to me and said, "Have you had plastic surgery?" And I started laughing. I said, "No. You look so different." And I go, "I am different." He's, "But you don't look like you used to look." I said, "No, I'm a different person. I grew a jaw. I have, you know, more eyebrows. I've gotten a lot stronger." And he said, "Well, you were really sweet when you were in high school, but you're like really something now." I just started laughing. He said, and you look so young." He said, "Are you sure you haven't any work done?" And I said, "No." I said, "Just clean living, you know?" And he goes, "Oh, like what do you do?" I go, I've let go of a lot of like past trauma. And he goes, "How do you do that?" So I had this whole conversation at my high school reunion about how to get rid of wrinkles. Because he had so many. And he goes, "But how do you let go?" And I said, "Well, you just let go." I said, "You have to like transform it and make it something positive." He goes, "Well, you know, I can thank my ex-wife for what I learned, but I'm still mad at her." I go, "Well, you gotta let go of like the mad at your ex-wife thing, you know."
Yeah.
And I started talking to him all about how to lose wrinkles at my high school reunion. So
cute.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think people have. I just don't think it's in. And just, you know, that comes to them that, wow, wrinkles equals trauma and things like that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and I really have not had any plastic surgery on my face, and I really have lost a lot of wrinkles, especially grief lines, and I've had a lot of deaths, you know, around me.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I think wrinkles are sometimes really valuable to have, but some are just more than you need, and when you process whatever you're holding on to, the wrinkles will go. And so aging is not inevitable. It's actually an overuse injury. So if you overuse your facial muscles, you're going to get wrinkles.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
You know? And so you can definitely rejuvenate. That's the really great thing about face reading.
Oh, this has been absolutely amazing.
So amazing.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I wish you could see our faces. That's all I have to say right now. We're smiling.
You get great faces.
This is our guest.
For those who can't see them, they're beautiful.
Oh,
both
so
of them.
Sweet.
Lillian Bridges, the author of Face Reading in Chinese Medicine. And where can people find you in the book?
Like what website?
Amazon. It sells at Amazon. It sells at almost every major bookstore can order it for you, but Amazon definitely has it in stock.
Okay. And do you want to give out the Lotus website or anything if people are interested in the course?
It's www.lotusinstitute.com.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much. You're such a doll.
Thank
like,
you.
Not only are you so knowledgeable, just such a sweet, sweet presence. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was great to be on your show. I enjoyed it.
Thank
Yay.
You. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
So next week we have Christian Arrieta, an estate planning, and he's going to talk to us also about traumas that family members have around inheritance.
So that should be really... so much. Yes, you always hear about that. Wow. Well, that's actually kind of a little bit about like Manchester by the Sea a little bit. Mm. So if you were interested in that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. Really, really cool show. My God,
cool show. Like, oh, she's like, awesome. So yes. Exciting. Yes.
All right.
So we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.